Hey everyone, Chris Ronting-Leon, host of FT After Hours, back in the studio on a late Thursday night trying to get this thing done and edited for you. So hopefully you'll be hearing this Friday. You know, it's really weird. It's obviously late, like I said, and being down here at the flight test, I've talked to Dave Knopf about it too. It's kind of creepy down here all by yourself, and I'm sitting in the studio and have the headphones on and can't hear much. But crazy thing was, just a little bit ago, the door chime went off. It's a little chime that goes off anytime anybody comes through the door. And being this late, generally nobody's around, and the door chime went off. Kind of freaked me out a little bit, but lo and behold, Jim, who is Josh Bixler's brother, comes walking through the door. So we chatted a little bit and everything was cool. So, all right, now I'm back trying to get this done for you. Anyway, for the next podcast that we'll probably do, I should have the whole crew back in studio, man, which is always a good time. I love sitting around chatting with those guys. And so we should have a bunch of new products that have been out for a while I'd love to discuss and talk about. I think we got some flying stories, and that brings me up to another point. I wanted to throw it out there too. If there's anything RC related, you know, I don't care what it is, if you got a problem with something or don't know how to fix it, or question about motors, ESC, whatever, any kind of product question, hey, shoot me an email or hit me up on Twitter or whatever, because we'd love to discuss it. You know, maybe you're looking at an airplane, you're not really sure, and we can talk about and discuss it, good points, bad points, or something like that, maybe, and just help you out. You know, that's what we're here for, and, you know, I love helping people out. It's just a thought, just an idea, you know, something out there you want us to discuss. Don't hesitate, throw it out there. Hey, for this podcast, I finally got Chad Capper and Eric Monroe back in the studio. And it's two guys really are busy and it's hard to get in here. I love to talk to these guys. And if there's was ever a time I wish I had a webcam in the studio, it would be sitting here with these two guys, because they're always very passionate about what they do. And you can tell by talking to them, you know, how they light up, and, you know, the Chad gets all involved with the hand movements going on. And it's really a good time. And, you know, I wish I could capture that on camera. But anyway, I sit down with Chad, and in case you may or may not know, Chad's new project is Rotor DR1, which is going to be a webisode series on YouTube. And, you know, I know some people know about it, and it's a fairly new concept of where it's community driven. And Chad really talks about that. And I got Eric in here because Eric's doing a lot of, probably most of the flying of all the drones in the movie. So I wanted to get his take on things. And I found it really interesting. I'm so excited, you know, to see where this is gonna go. So, all right, let's get this thing rolling and let me know what you think. So strap in, kiddies, because here we go. Hey guys, welcome. We're back again, another episode of FT After Hours, and I'm excited about this one here. I got two guys in studio here that I'd love to have in here a lot more. It's tough to get these two guys in here because they're always so busy with everything they got going on in their lives and behind the scenes stuff and everything. So I have Eric Monroe here back with me.
And his friend Chad Capper.
And his buddy, who I've heard of him, this guy before, but I don't know much about him. Chad Capper is back in the studio again. And I have to say, you know, last time I had you guys in, man, obviously it was separate, but, you know, we had a great time. And I like to talk to you guys. You're very interesting and everything. So I'm so happy to
be back, get you guys in here together. And basically, we're going to kind of go over the new, what is this, Chad, a web series, I guess?
Yeah, it's an episodic webisode series.
Uh-huh.
It's called Rotor DR1.
Yep. Okay. Now, is this something... Again, you have to forgive me because I'm really kind of stupid when it comes to this stuff and everything. Is this a first?
Well, it's a first. Multi-rotor focused webisodic series that incorporates community input.
Okay, that's I was kind of assuming that, but I wasn't sure. But
it's definitely a type of first. I mean, other people have done the webisodic series, like
right.
Rocket Jump. They have Video Game High School, which my son is a huge fan of,
mm-hmm.
and they're in season 3, and it is an awesome format. What they do is they create webisodes and then turn it into a feature film. Halo has done it also. They had their what's it called?
Forward Unto Dawn.
Yeah, Forward Unto Dawn. And my son is also a fan of that. And it just so happens my son stars in Rotor DR1, which is
right.
Same kind of concept. Now, so that's been done before. The part that hasn't been done to the level that we're doing it is the way and the level that we incorporate the audience feedback.
Yeah.
So we actually open up Facebook and we don't even have our website done yet. We got 800 likes on Facebook and the responses and engagement is blowing up. And it's just such a small seed crowd is what I call it.
Yeah. Right. Right.
We post photos from the shoots and ask questions like what logo they like better or what props they would choose if they were making it, certain elements of the story.
Right. And again, I'm getting new to Facebook. I haven't been on Facebook, and my wife said, I think you ought to get on. It's good for the, the FT After Hours podcast. And so I'm learning and I'm following it. So it's interesting every day to see the little updates and the photos and kind of see the behind the scenes. I find that kind of fascinating too. And I've actually been following a little bit on the forums too about just following what people are posting and what they're want to see, and it's kind of fascinating really.
I'm having a blast, and I think the reason this is going to be special is not a lot of directors will accept input from the community this
right.
way, because oftentimes we as directors we want it to be our thing and
exactly.
our creative vision
right.
where my vision for this really is the community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about being my creative story
right.
It's about interpreting their creative elements and putting them together in a professional manner
right.
So we're really excited
yeah.
about it. Eric, what do you think of
yeah.
the concept?
I think it's great. The forums have been just kind of blowing up
yeah.
with everybody. This one guy on the forums, what's his name?
Bank and Yank. Yeah.
He wrote like half the script, I think, in the first 3 days, So it's cool to see the creativity
right.
come out and people
okay.
get involved.
Now, before we really jump into this and
too
get
late.
Into it and everything, which I know we already kind of started this, but I don't see you guys too much anymore, and I just want to kind of see what's been going on and what you've been up to, and I kind of hate to say, but I really miss the old flight test days of coming down on the weekends and hanging out and stuff like the way we used to do it. So now the way things are and not, so what's going on? I mean, have you guys get to go out and fly much yourself or just what's going on? Eric, what's been going on with you?
I missed craft services. That we just got that back on the set of the movie. So that's been cool. Thanks to Julie for that.
Yeah.
But as far as flying, I haven't flown a lot for fun.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working a lot.
Right.
But I have I guess I shouldn't say I haven't flown a lot for fun. I guess the Storch kind of brought that back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I got one of the early models of that at Flight Fest and got to play with that and build it with my daughter, actually, which was cool. So I've been flying that quite a bit and kind of getting back into the airplane, that thing that I haven't done in a while. But yeah, mostly just a lot of work. which is good.
Yeah. How about you, Chad? I mean, you've been kind of around a little bit here and there, but nearly not what we're used to.
Well, yeah, I haven't been in the episodes, but I definitely stop by weekly at least.
Uh-huh.
But my total focus has been Rotor DR1.
Right.
I mean, you know, a big purpose for this whole shift and you know, flight test was the biggest part of my life for 4 years.
Right.
And I've had this project in the back of my brain for about two. David, my son, and I, even last year, we built a set in the basement. We
yeah.
were doing test shoots in the winter. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were really trying to think about how do we move this forward. And when the opportunity came about to make it happen, I mean, I just jumped on it, you
right.
know. And so we're really excited to do this. So I'm focused.
Like, so you're diving head first, and this is all you're about right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going 12 hours a day, and it's so weird because I'm physically and mentally more active than I have been in the past 2 years, but I still have more energy.
Uh-huh, know? Right.
And that's how it was when we started Flight Test.
Yeah.
It was the same way. But then eventually Flight Test just started to become its own
yeah.
beast.
Right.
And it runs itself. And I mean, Josh is running it now.
Right,
but,
right.
But it's just... It's so big now. It's, I mean, not huge big. It's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's mature.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Being there from the beginning and seeing it now. I mean, it's still flight test and it's still fun, but it definitely has changed.
It's matured.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it doesn't need me as much, mm-hmm. you know? And so now I guess I want to move on to a project where, well, here's an important element I haven't really shared with anybody, but when I started flight test, I wanted it to be something my son and I did together.
Uh-huh.
And because how I even got into the hobby was the little Air Hogs mm-hmm. planes that you get at Walmart. My son and I would go out and fly them together. Well, about the time flight test got going, my son started to lose interest and he was interested in making video games and composing music
right.
and acting and all those other things. So he would help out on flight test. He was more interested in editing an episode
yeah.
than actually flying.
Yeah.
And he would fly, but he just wasn't passionate about it
right.
like the rest of us were.
Yeah.
So this is an opportunity to incorporate my son's passions and mine
uh-huh.
together. So I know it seems a little weird, but, you know, because flight test was really built to grow those connections. And ironically enough, my own son
yeah.
wasn't as into
right.
it. So,
all right, let's get in the time machine a little bit and go back. Where did it initially start? I mean, where did the thought come with it? Was it something that your son brought up to you, or was it something that just popped in your head? How did you create it?
Well, very, very initially was, I don't know how many years ago it was, probably 3 years ago. When flight test was really rolling, I just thought, and multi-rotors were getting popular, I was just having a lot of fun. And David was making these films of, remember like the tank, you know, where it and
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he had the tricopter hunting helium
yeah,
balloons.
Right.
And I thought, oh, that's really great.
With the fireworks.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What if we did a movie
uh-huh.
that's based all on multi-rotors? All the characters are multi-rotors. And that's how it started. So originally, I intended that there weren't even any humans, or if there were, they were minimized. That was just the very initial seed concept.
Uh-huh.
But from there, I started talking to David about it and talking to Christian, my son. And we just started brainstorming, talking more and more about it. And we started to build this world in our heads that it's this post-apocalyptic or post-cataclysmic, you know, world. And that, you know, Amazon and Google have built all these drones.
Yeah.
And now they're, but they have maybe like extra, like ridiculously long, you know, power supplies, whether they're fusion based or whatever it might be. Or, you know, maybe they're solar charging stations. But these drones, even after, you know, a lot of humanity's gone, are still flying around just running empty missions.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, oh, wouldn't that be interesting? And then people could capture them for their power supplies. So we started doing all, you know, brainstorming and thinking about that. So we outlined a very basic premise and we sent that out there. And then people latched on right away and started adding to it. And, you know, all the what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
What if this? What if that? And we were overwhelmed with...
I was, yeah.
I mean, actually humbled. You know, we started a thread on the flight test forum. And I got to tell you, there are way more creative people than me. I mean, I would not have been able to think of, you know, a fraction of the ideas and that they've brought to the table. And so, I don't know, I just started getting addicted to that input. Like, I want to hear more. Yeah. I want to hear story elements. And then as a director, all I'm going to do is filter it. I'm just going to say, okay, we're going to use this idea, that, and I'm gonna go with the popular choices and figure out how to bring them together into a whole.
Doesn't that get a little overwhelming, though? I mean, when you got, say, I don't know what you're thinking, but you have kind of an idea where it may go or whatever, and then you start reading on some subjects or what these people, the input they're giving you, mm-hmm. now you're like going, oh no, we could go this direction and this direction, but I like this idea. How do you actually, you know, pick and choose, or do you try different things and see how it works first?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know if, when we're all done, we'll explain the process, but right now it's just kind of figuring it out. And I think the best ingredient is, openness, mm-hmm. just willing to accept other people's ideas. I think that's the key ingredient, because I'm telling you, it sounds like a simple concept. Most people are not open to other people's ideas.
Right.
You know, when a filmmaker gets funding to make a film, the last thing they want to do is accept other people's ideas.
Right. And change the vision they have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which a lot of times happen because the movie studios say, no, this is what we want. But, you know, they're, you know, that happens all the time.
Right. And that's actually how we started out, was I was essentially the executive producer, and I brought on Michael and Ryan, and it really wasn't fair to them because it was my vision. I was just impassioned with this, and you know, they brought amazing cinematography, you know, storytelling ability, all of that, but it's not really fair to ask them to do their job, but totally differently.
Oh, I see.
You know, so so we ran into a couple hiccups there. And, you know, they did, oh my gosh, they spent a week shooting trailer footage, you know, based on, you know, how they thought that we should interpret everything. And it was just a bit of a struggle because the concept is so, I couldn't provide the clarity. Like, it's really clear in my head.
Uh-huh.
And even as I'm sitting here explaining, I'm sure people are like, well, wait, what? How does that work? You know, you're doing the same thing. You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
How do you do that? So at some point, I had to humbly come to the table and say, guys, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to have to step in the director's seat because this is my vision and I can't convey it. I can't hand it off.
Uh-huh.
And I felt horrible, but they were like, you know, Chad, we completely understand.
Yeah, they may be a little relieved kind of.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't speak highly enough of Michael and Ryan. I mean, I still work with them. They mm-hmm. do corporate stuff for, you know, our parent company. And Michael helped start Flight Test.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Michael was there actually even before Josh.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just wonderfully talented people that, you know, come together and do stuff. But this was a case where it was a difficult situation. And now we're transitioning and I'm back in the director's seat after I don't know how long. I haven't directed anything like this for years. But I'm really glad to have, you know, some of my go-to people like Eric.
Yeah. yeah. And speaking of Eric, explain a little bit how you got involved and what you're doing and how you're helping out.
I wanted to comment first. You mentioned overwhelming earlier.
Yeah.
I think that one of the overwhelming thing was how many people commented and so quickly. There's close to 40 pages on the Flight Test Forum.
I know.
Just about this film. And
so
to see that, I mean, the response was just overwhelming. Like, I was trying to keep up every day with
exactly.
reading.
Yes.
You know, Michael at that time was like, you know, I need you to keep up with reading through the forum stuff so you can kind of get ideas for when we are building the copter and what it's going to look like. And I mean, every 5 seconds I'm trying to get on my iPad and there's 5 new responses. And it was crazy.
Yeah. And I almost get just as excited to get on and read some of the stuff of the ideas these people are coming up with. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're like, well, that's a great idea. And then, you know, 3 threads down, you're like, oh, this one's even better.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and we do have Let's yeah. finish talking about air.
So to answer your other question, you said, how did I get involved?
Yeah, and what you're doing. And
sure. Basically, I was sitting at home one day, and I think it was Michael who called me mm-hmm. and just said, hey, I need a pilot for, and it was actually the mood board. And so Michael was like, hey, if you can come shoot this for me, I'll buy you Starbucks or something. You
know? Yeah.
So I had,
Eric's normally more expensive than that.
Yeah. So I had a big Y6 copter and a couple quads and yep. my Hexa. And I just sent him some pictures and said, hey, you know, which one do you want me to fly? And so they unanimously decided that the tri-frame looked cool and they liked it. So I brought that and we shot it, and it just, the crew just gelled. It was just really cool. You know, Ryan and Michael were there. Christian was there. You know, so it was a fun experience. We shot this thing in maybe 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And so the mood board was just a piece that was built in order to hand off then to Chad, and I think that was just Michael's way of kind of bidding on the job.
It was really just to say, hey, you know, here's kind of a visual concept
of what it might look like.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So we did that and then didn't hear nothing for, you know, a little while, that decisions were being made, etc. And so then he called me one day and said, we got the job.
Wow.
So if you want to be the pilot and the builder, then you're on. So uh-huh. Yeah, so we had a couple meetings and talked a little bit, and then kind of turned it loose then to the forums. You know, what do you guys want to see? What kind of copter? What's it going to look like? How big is it? How small is it? You know, what kind of personality does it have, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I got brought on board.
Yeah, we needed a pilot that could express personality through flight. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. You know, it's just how it moves.
And you needed a well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if people don't know out there, Eric is phenomenal at flying anything, quad, hex, whatever. He really is good.
He proved it yesterday. We were doing this shot where, you know, Christian is walking along a horizon line, and I wanted a DR1, the drone, you know, his companion drone, to kind of fly in, catch up, and kind of fly around him and then fly off. It was this really complex thing, and Eric just nailed it.
It was pretty wild because we had to fly line of sight.
Uh-huh.
And so we had, when Christian took off, there was almost, you know, there was kind of three parts to the action. Chad called action for Christian, then called action for another character in the movie to run and catch up with him, then called action on the copter. So I took off after him. It's windy. We're on top of this building, you know, like it was pretty intense. And then I had to like catch up to them, fly past, and actually do a nose-in circle where I basically lose the copter for a split second behind the actors and then, you know, circle them completely. So it was challenging, but at the same time, it was,
Well, fun. And we shoot it in a way that it feels compressed. Like, I mean, the copter's not, it's not hitting, you know, or going to hit anyone.
Oh, right.
Sure.
But through the lens, we shoot, you know, and compressed means like, you know, you have no third dimension there. You don't. So when you shoot in line with things, they look closer, you know, than what they are.
Right.
But I like to express that because I know we're going to get comments when people watch it. They're going to be like, you flew right, you know.
Yeah.
Because from my perspective, it even, you know, because you're looking from the side and it looks like, wow, they're really close. But then you go to the, you know, other perspective and you realize how far away they
are. Well, and actually one thing, when we did have to get the copter really, really close to him for one of the shots in the trailer, and we actually took a screwdriver and gaff taped it to the bottom of the helicopter, and then I
looked
was
like
able,
a lollipop.
I thought that was really cool.
Rotor on a stick. So yeah. I was able to turn on the motors and just barely get them spinning. So
it was funny.
We were fudging that shot.
Yeah. And that could be really, I mean, because you can really get kind of intricate with, you know, with that.
So
yeah.
I was trying to make the copter float like it was flying and, you know, kind of look organic. And
Well, and one of the things we're doing is we're not going to do any CG copters.
Good.
Like, like we're being, now we're going to have to get into like sky replacements and things like that. More aesthetic.
Sure.
You know, computer generated imagery. But as far as the copters, I'm being a purist.
Good.
You know, we're doing everything real. I mean, we might put them on a string or a stick, you know, for safety reasons.
Right.
But as far as like, we're not CGing any copters.
Yeah. Now, some of the places you've been shooting, again, I've just been following, looking at the pictures and stuff. Some of it looks really cool. Uh-huh. How are you finding the places to shoot?
I guess Stone Cap we've been around for 16 years. We're always shooting various locations. So eventually you just start to build a backlog. But this week we're going to be focusing on locations. So on the forum thread, there were so many great suggestions. So we're going to start
put like Google Map pinpoints.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that part. Yeah. And that's why I was going to ask you, are you going to broaden out a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have any places in mind or where you...
Well, yeah, there's... I would love to get up at the old Geauga Lake location,
which
I did walk the property last year when we were going to try to get this going last year. And I met with the vice president up there that's in charge of the grounds. And he was really, really positive about it. But corporate, I guess, were a little concerned about liability. And so I don't know. Now that we're a little further along, I might reapproach him and see if we can get in there. Otherwise, there's some old aircraft in woods and that somebody had posted on the forum, and I don't know where it's at. So we haven't. But that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a bunch of suggestions that we're going to start looking into.
I'm pushing for Aruba.
Yeah, I was going to say somewhere tropical.
Right.
Wow. And yeah, that Geauga, that place has been closed for what now? 3-4 years, maybe longer?
At least.
So it's got to look pretty cool up there now, you know, with the weeds growing, you know, just...
I always tell everybody it looks like a Call of Duty map.
It does. Yeah. Right. Because even on Twitter, I follow the abandoned pics, and I just love to look at some of that stuff that's been empty and abandoned for,
on a tangent, I seen a photographer that did some work in the city of Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was just amazing to see what
was still there.
And there's trees growing up in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
And
there was, I think I seen one too. Again, it was on abandoned pics where like all the vehicles and everything that they had in that area at one time is still there. Everybody just walked away.
The other one that I saw was the from the, I think it was the 84 Olympics. Was that in Sarajevo? Like all the bobsled tracks were all abandoned. And
I love that stuff.
There's a couple of shopping malls that I think
Randall Park around here. Yep. Yeah. I think the problem is they said that we did a little searching into that and
they're unsafe.
Because they can't quite figure out who actually owns it because I guess it somehow defaulted, went back to the bank and the bank like let it go or something crazy. So I heard there's like homeless people people living in it. And so that's a little, not sure how to approach that one.
Speaking of that, did you hear the bird story?
No.
Oh, goodness. We were down at the very first night that we shot trailer footage for Rotor. We were at the Hercules engine plant where we've done a lot of the filming.
It's an old abandoned.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've done some flight test episodes down there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were there till what?
3:30,
I think, in the morning. Yeah. And people were starting to pack gear up and we're wrapping up. And me and one of the other guys had taken out a load to the truck. And we went back in and grabbed the rest of our stuff. And the guys were like, hey, we'll see you later. So that left Tyler, Mikey, and Michael, and I think Ryan, just the four of them. And so Ryan and Michael went back out to the car and they get a phone call from inside the plant that says, you need to come back in here right now. And so basically in a nutshell, there was people in there with them. And this guy was like standing behind this pole and like barely peering out from behind it and like releases a pigeon.
No.
At the people and says, do you want a bird? And like it flies out around them and comes back and lands in this guy's hand. And like it was really creepy. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I had already left by that point, but I heard the story later.
Wow. What are some of the, I don't know how much you want to talk about your business and what you do.
Oh, sure.
Okay. But, what are some of the struggles you're finding that are different doing this, like kind of like a movie compared to what, you normally do?
Boy, that's a good question. I would say like when we film aerial footage, we're more looking for a super smooth shot. And so I have time to kind of plan out a flight plan and get myself where I can put the copter somewhere safely. And not that that's different from this. It's just we're trying to fly the copter in different ways. I mean, there's a lot of similarities. I'm doing chase footage sometimes when we're doing aerial filming and the same thing where we're chasing an actor here. I'm just not filming them. But Yeah, I'd say that, you know, things are a little bit slower paced when you're doing aerial filming versus filming a movie. So mm-hmm. that's been something that I'm getting used to.
The movie or the series, you have a lot of people to coordinate and machinery. And yeah, so
Are you guys trying to set stuff up to where you have the cameras on the copters and you're getting footage right from the, you know, well, drones, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, some of it will be fake. Like if you see like the star drone, you know, the boy's companion, mm-hmm. if you see his point of view, we won't actually use the model. We'll use something else that flies better because the boy's companion, it looks cool, mm-hmm. but it's really designed to look, you know, and have its own character. It's not designed for performance.
I got you.
So then what we'll do is we'll have to, you know, use another mm-hmm. aircraft for that.
Right. Who's been doing a lot of the design stuff in like of like the tricopter? Looking at it, looks pretty on the picture wise, the details and everything on it are pretty cool. Who's been doing?
That's a friend of mine from high school, John Pinkerton. Uh-huh. He is just an amazing sculptor mm-hmm. and, you know, designer, and he's the aesthetics. Eric is the mechanics.
Okay.
So the frames and, you know, the piloting ability and the builds, you know, and stuff like that, that's Eric. And then the
look of
is John. So
okay.
And that's where I feel like I'm kind of building my Olympic team. Like I'm picking the best people.
Right.
You know, and John, I mean, his work, I mean, he's got some really odd stuff that he's done. So yeah. It's dark and that, but he's so talented. Mm-hmm. And Eric is just so talented. I know when Eric builds something and he's going to fly it, that it's going to be rock solid.
Right.
And I know when John designs something, it's going to be like nobody else yeah. would. So to bring those together, we have this, I mean, DR1 is the, you know, the main drone. Mm-hmm. Like I want one.
Yeah. That's what I thought when I first see it. I'm like, man, that thing just looks cool. Even if it was just hanging on the wall.
Right. Like,
now has John come up with some designs and say, hey, I think we ought to do this or let's try this. And you guys right away know, no, we can't do that because it would just completely, you know, take the flight characteristics out of it. You know, won't.
Well, he's been pretty good about the flight characteristics, but it's other things like how the camera's placed and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like he had made suggestions. Well, like, let's build the camera in. And I'm like, well, I want the camera to articulate. I want it to be able to look down and look around. And a lot of that we haven't really gotten to yet. Like, we're just working with kind of conceptual props right now. The finals aren't done. So what we're doing is he has two prototypes that we made, and that's what we've been using for the trailer. And they're heavy. And, well, one's a lot lighter than the other. But it's a process. Mm-hmm. You know, you build one, and it's the concept, and then you refine that. So he built two. Now we're going to have him build three more, two more flying ones that will be our primaries, and then a dummy one that can, you know, if it needs to crash or you know, or just a prop in the background or something or whatever. But yeah, he'll be building a handful of them.
No kidding.
Yeah, we actually talked about that recently. We're going to try to build three or four actual flying frames. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to build one that'll just be a dummy copter. Mm. Like one of the shots that had been talked about was burying him in the ground.
And
you can't bury my copter. Yeah, right. It won't fly.
Well, right. They did on the one. And, yeah. then Eric's turning the motors.
Oh,
and it's like,
there's got to be kidding me.
Oh,
so,
my gosh. Yeah, we're going to have a dummy copter. And then that's actually something that Chad can expound upon, but we're building he said he wants one, you know, we're building the main rotor characters built off the electro hub,
mm-hmm,
the flight test copter.
Yep.
So that'll be something that down the road can mm-hmm. be duplicatable
for
the flight test community. And so I'll let him kind of expound upon how that'll happen.
One of the pieces Josh has been working on is a tricopter tough tilt for the tail.
Right.
And so we thought it'd be really great to incorporate that into this model. So about the time this is out, that'll be out, and then, you know, people will start to buy the components for this. Then when we're done and we settle in on the exact look and everything, we're going to look into mass producing the DR1 model, so people will be able to buy all the parts and put together their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about that. Like, that's the thing. I don't care if we have 10 followers. I'm doing it so I can have one.
Yeah. I mean, it'd even be cool down the road if even if you got, you know, this blows up and becomes successful, if even if there's kind of like a toy manufacturer or something that you know,
the Hot Wheels DR1.
Yeah, exactly. or even a company that builds a small version of it, you know, right. like a nano quad size, you know, or something like that would be phenomenal.
Oh yeah, that's good.
You know,
got my wheels turning.
Yeah. Let's see, what else was I going to add? I don't know if we actually. I know a lot of our audience already kind of knows about this. Knows what's going on, and but I don't know, for a lot of people that don't know or this is new to them, mm-hmm. I don't know if we started like explain the whole, like, what is it actually about, who's in it, you know, what you're, you know, actually doing, like obviously your son's in it, but maybe explain a little bit more in depth on the concept of it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
The basic premise that we're starting with is it's a post either apocalyptic or cataclysmic event.
Okay.
So something that had wiped out, you know, the government, everything's pretty much shut down. Half the people are either missing or dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this boy trying to survive in this world. And it's probably about a year after whatever the event was. And at some point during the first episode, he realizes his dad is out there. He thought maybe he was dead. He's not sure. But there's some kind of confirming data that says dad is out there. Mm-hmm. So he decides to set out on this quest. And maybe right prior to that decision or right after, he encounters this new drone, and it's different than the rest. The rest are true drones. They're just flying empty missions.
Okay.
This one is sentient. It has intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And so it stands apart. And so this becomes his companion and his helper that propels him to search for his father.
Okay.
Now we'll have a young girl that becomes a part of the story at some point, and that's the second character we're looking at, and we're mm-hmm. going to have the audience help decide who that is. Mm-hmm. We narrowed it down to two actresses, and we shot the same scene with both of them,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to release a video of both of them doing the same scene.
Right.
And then the audience will choose which one we get to pick.
Now, was that originally in the script, or was that something that... Because originally it was just the boy, I think,
No, there was always going to be supporting...
Oh, okay.
You know, like he comes across people.
Okay.
Like, yeah, now her level of involvement, mm-hmm. it's going to be determined by the audience.
No kidding.
Yeah, wow. So it's... I mean, she can get killed off in episode two or... You know, not show up at all or be in the whole thing, but it's really going to be more guided by the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do is, you know, this core crowd that we're starting with is the flight test crowd. And even though Christian isn't passionate about flight,
uh-huh.
he is very similar to our crowd and has a lot of characteristics
right.
of myself and a lot of our crowd. So the point is that he's relatable and that we can kind of go on this journey with him and decide. You know, now this doesn't mean that we do everything everyone says. That's absolutely impossible.
Right.
What we do is we just try to understand our audience better and understand how do we take these elements and incorporate it into an interesting story that mm-hmm. is challenging and, you know, has conflict and drama. And,
mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much it.
Okay, now explain to me, because again, I don't know. Is this something like you guys put out a 15-minute episode weekly, monthly? How does that work on YouTube?
We're going to do probably 10-minute episodes, mm-hmm. 10 episodes of 10 minutes
10
each.
10 minutes, okay.
And they'll be once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is we're going to, you know, this next month from this point on, we're going to be heavily involved with our online community and saying and asking lots of questions and proposing options and we're going to be developing the script from there. Now, what we'll do is some of this will be narrated and voiced over,
mm-hmm.
Which will allow us to be a little quicker on adjustments because we could very easily change a voiceover to tell a little bit different story in between episodes. So, and then we adjust as we go. It's kind of, I explain it's a lot like a choose your own adventure book. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah.
If you're over a certain age, you definitely know what they are. But the choose your own adventure
right.
was, the whole book was written. But you still, based on how it was set up, mm-hmm. you still felt like you were in control of the story.
Right.
This is very similar. Like, we're going to have structure. You know, there's going to be, there is structure there. I mean, we have experience in telling stories. But what we're asking for is the content. So if the cataclysmic event is an airborne virus or a water virus or, you know, this or that, that doesn't change the structure at all. You know, that's an element that becomes more of a preferential mm-hmm. choice rather than an actual structural element. So that's how it's going to work is, you know, we get to plug this input into an existing structure.
Okay, so then after you get the 10 episodes out, mm-hmm. or is it just kind of sit back and see where this thing goes and then say, you know, we have an overwhelming response, let's do 10 more?
Or yeah, exactly. Based on the response and involvement on this, we'll dictate the future. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, we'll complete it no matter what, even if our audience starts to die off or mm-hmm. whatever. We're still going to complete the series.
Okay.
But... Based on the feedback and the input we have so far, I don't anticipate that's going to be a problem.
Wow. And then maybe the ultimate thing then is to actually turn this into a full
feature film.
Hour. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be an hour and a half feature film. Mm-hmm. And we might even make further adjustments in the feature based on what we experienced through that whole process. Mm-hmm. So, and then on top of that, I haven't even mentioned, we're going to be doing behind the scenes the whole time.
Oh, okay.
So behind the scenes will be released in parallel with each. Actually, it'll start sooner. Behind the scenes, we're going to start to release those probably this week. Mm-hmm. And we're going to let people see the process as it goes, not gather all the footage and then show them afterwards. We're going to show our struggles as we go. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that too.
So Eric, when you're out and you're kind of filming the scenes and stuff, and again, you know, with your business and everything, you've been kind of doing this for quite a while. Is there times too, though, you know, if maybe you're flying and you're doing a shoot and you look and you can tell Chad, obviously you guys are pretty tight and everything. Hey, I think if we do it this way, or if I stand over here and we take the quad this, you know, this direction, it'll look better. Or anything like? Do you get the input?
Definitely. Before when Michael and Ryan were there, and now that Chad has taken over the project as far as director, they've always came to me basically almost every shot and allowed me to have input as far as how to coordinate the flight and, you know, where the copter's going to be and what's safe to, you know, move it out of the way and so on and so forth.
Allowed, we require it.
Yeah. Like we did a shot yesterday where Christian walks by a doorway. Mm-hmm. And so I have to hide off camera, but I'm flying line of sight. So I still have to be at an angle where I can see the copter and they can't see me.
Oh, yeah.
And then Christian kind of like walks past this door. Am I allowed to reveal?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Christian walks past the door and Rotor is hovering in the door.
Oh, wow.
And so like he walks past the doorway and then he's going to like come back and look real quick and I have to climb up into it. So, you know, I had a couple of different options if I went to the side of the door or uh-huh. if I went up or what so on. So yeah, I get to kind of make a lot of suggestions about how and where and
yeah, the scene is where Christian walks by and we're following him so we get a glimpse of
as he walks
DR1 in the background, and then when we whip pan back, it's gone. So Eric has to hit his cue immediately uh-huh. and get out of the shot.
And it's wild because, you know, everybody was out there and like I have a guy in here lighting the uh-huh. copter with a like an LED panel. Yeah. And so like I can't hit him.
Oh my God.
The copter's blowing dust everywhere. Yeah. And like it's pretty loud in there because I was inside of a building and uh-huh. it was echoing. So like when Chad was calling action, I couldn't hear him half the time.
I have to yell.
Yeah. So
need a megaphone.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Now, as we all know too, flying these things, there's always something breaks or something happens or
never,
whatever.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Never. Never. What are some of the problems you've encountered?
We've actually been really lucky so far.
Yeah.
We've had very, very minimal damage. I broke a prop the other day when Alex and I were doing a shot back in the woods. Mm-hmm. Again, like Rotor's not outfitted with FPV gear yet. Uh-huh. And so I'm flying line of sight, like whipping through trees, and he's following me with the race quad, and like the Rotor copter's actually disappearing behind trees, and like I'm just cringing before it comes out the other side, you know?
Oh my gosh.
And so we flew a good 6-7 minutes and just nothing, and it was windy and a branch like flipped out and actually just took my tail rotor out and spun me in and broke a prop.
Wow.
We've been pretty lucky.
Pretty fortunate.
It's been good. I mean, there's been little dings here and there. Mm-hmm. yeah, for the most part, though, that's what you get when you get a good pilot.
Mm. But I think so, that's the coordination of the shots. You know, we're looking at stuff ahead of time and saying, hey, how can we do this without crashing our copter?
I was going to say, there's got to be a lot of detail and setup before the shot.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're hovering a copter around people.
Right.
Obviously, I want to make sure that's the top priority. I can't.
Safety, yeah.
I don't want to hit the boss's son here. Yeah.
No, and we're,
or anyone for that matter.
We're staying to small blades and things like that. So plastic props that are small and, you know, we don't. Yeah. So even if we're absolute worst scenario, which would be, you know, very slim, it would hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be any serious.
Yeah. Like we're flying APC like slow flyer props.
Yeah.
So, you know. We're not running screaming high RPM carbons or anything like that.
Right.
I think I get hit more just flying on my own than.
Right.
Yeah, that is a good video, Chad, that you have of you hitting yourself. What else was it? Okay. So you have the DR1 or the one that follows around the boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how much you can talk about, but like. What other ideas as far as, I guess, want to say the bad quads or whatever, mm-hmm. do you have some of those or are you building something for that?
Yeah, we're, and what we're trying to do is there's, it's like, that's probably a bad example. I was going to use guns. There's no bad guns, just bad people, you know, but it's kind of a similar concept. The drones are just, they're not good or bad. They don't have consciousness.
Oh, okay.
Like they're just drones, and then people will capture them for like their power supplies,
okay.
or they'll capture them and repurpose them for their own uses.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a bad drone. You know, it's just drones that are used to spy on people or something, you know, but that's the things that, you know, people are scared about now. You know, we don't want to try to pretend or act or make some kind of political statement. But we want it to be very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's not an evil drone, you know, like it's
right. And that was one of my questions, you know, with everything going on with, you know, the scare of drones and all this garbage going on with FAA. Did you have to change a few things about your ideas of what you wanted to do because you really didn't want to freak people out or scare them too bad?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
I think we're just trying to adhere to a story that's believable.
And mm-hmm. realistic.
Yeah, okay. Like I'm not consulting with the FAA or
But I mean, you know, you get an idea that where we wouldn't take it, you know, the wrong way, but you know how, you know, people are with the drones nowadays where you know you're creating this thing and they see a bad drone, so to speak, mm-hmm. and they're like, "Ah, oh, you know."
No, I mean, that's why it was important to build the seed crowd from the flight test community.
Mm-hmm.
Was we wanted people that know what this machinery is. I mean, I would say the hobby community knows more about drones than most professionals.
I totally agree.
Or, you know, I'm doing air quotes, professionals.
Yeah, right.
There are lots of little companies and agencies that pop up and they think they know about, you know, aircraft. And they might have a cool design and a big budget, but they really don't know the aircraft like the hobbyists do.
Right.
I mean, it blows my mind. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've come across people that... You know, they look totally pro, and then they get out, and you realize they don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little dramatic, but you know, it's quite shocking to see the budgets people get and what they're doing. And I'll take a hobbyist over. Air quotes again, public, you know, professional.
Well, and that's happening a lot because the copters are becoming more, you know, they're autonomous almost.
Exactly.
They've got auto leveling boards and GPS boards. And so people who aren't hobbyists, who aren't into RC flight, but mm-hmm. really want to carry a GoPro up in the air, can go buy a copter for $1,000
exactly.
And they don't know airspace rules and they don't know, you know, elevations and so on. And so it makes it, you know, it can get messy, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, have you had companies, now that this is out, contact you? Hey, we fly, you know, we do aerial photography and blah, blah, blah. And
yeah, we've had a few companies contact us. And, mm-hmm. You know, we're it's kind of hard to sort that out. I'm hoping more will, because what I want to do is give our audience options.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to do is if people are interested in their aircraft being featured on the show, and now I want to qualify that. I don't want them to look like hobby craft. They need to be refined. They need to look like something that would be a futuristic build and something that would be very durable, fly in weather.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for options, and I want to give it And the great thing is I'm not making the decision. I'm going to put it out there and let our audience decide what options do you like. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have multiples. It's not just going to be like one type of drone. Like we're going to have many types.
Right.
But I think at the same time, if someone calls up and says they have a DJI Phantom, you know,
we
can go buy one of those.
Yeah. Right.
So. Yeah.
It's, I think it's something unique and creative and something that has a look that nobody else has.
Yeah. We're looking for what's, you know, what's two generations beyond the Phantom.
Right.
You know, what's, just looking for stuff that's maybe beyond the now or could be beyond what's available now.
And that kind of blew me away when you were talking about that was just a rotor bones tricopter done up, because obviously through the pictures when I looked at it, I was like, man, they must have spent like weeks and hours, maybe months, you know, building this. I thought it was all custom.
And we haven't even talked about this. Eric brought it up a little bit. This is so exciting to me because rotor bones, the reason it was called rotor bones was to build raw frames that you could dress up.
Right.
And this is the first, 2 years now?
Yeah.
Finally have an opportunity to do it. So imagine, I mean, I'm excited after this. I want to create more modules to put on it. But what we're doing is designing around the half inch booms, any hub.
Right.
We're designing around the standard measured pieces so people can then dress up their copters.
That is cool.
And what's cool is people who already own the AnyHub or the Electro Hub can participate because it's backwards compatible.
Yeah, they could have bought it or built it 2 years ago or however long it was we released, and they'll be able to start dressing it up.
Wow. What's that made out of? Is it foam or what? I was curious.
Well, in the end, if we actually mass produce them, we're going to figure something out, either injection mold or something. But currently it's
this is great.
Yeah, it's just the base of the bulk globe is just a like Christmas ornament that we got at the craft store.
Really?
And it just so happened to be the right size. And then John, I mean, worked his magic. He put grooves in it and rivets and painted it and added to it. And he's using this stuff called epoxy. It's with an A. It's a two-part epoxy that starts to act like clay, and you can mold it with your hands in that, and then once it hardens, that's one of the reasons why it's so heavy is stuff like that.
Sure.
I wish we had, I think at some point we need to just get footage of that process
because
you wouldn't believe what the stuff looks like when he starts.
Huh.
You would never imagine that it is what it has become.
Right.
Oh, and then there's like the struts on the outside.
Yeah.
They're windshield wiper blades.
Really?
We went to the hardware store and they had windshield wipers on sale for like $1.50. So I bought a bunch of those.
And they look like struts.
Wow.
And the landing gear on the one. We have a couple different designs between the two prototypes, which both of them will be in the trailer.
Uh-huh.
So
I got to, sometime maybe on a weekend or something, if you guys are shooting, I got to get out and
you
got to
come hang out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm excited to work more with John because I'm like the tech head.
Yeah.
Like I love, making something where this bolt goes in and it lines up perfectly to attach this. And then that way he can have a solid foundation to design around as far as the artistic look. So, like every time we shoot together, John and I, when we're not doing anything, we're off talking about how we can bolt this and, add this and so on. And like, he's coming at it from a completely different angle than what I am.
Right.
And so we're hoping that with both of us together, we can really come up with something awesome.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I love to look at the pictures. that's pretty cool. Hey, what about your son? What does he think about all this?
It's so funny. If you were to just ask him, he'd probably shrug his shoulders and be like,
yeah, that would be a typical Christian answer.
That's why I'm asking you. But he loves it. Like, that night we were shooting till 3:30 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
It was 3:30. We were all exhausted and he's all peppy and, he's like,
we wanted to know where he had the coffee hidden.
Yeah. I mean, he's just having a blast. I mean, he's loving it. I mean, he likes acting. He's very good at it. I mean, he's been doing it for years. He's been in some of the corporate videos we've done.
Uh-huh.
Definitely one of the most pro actors I've ever worked
really?
With.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. He just gets it. Like, I don't have to explain a lot to him. I just have to give him backstory, like where his character's coming from, why he is the way he is. And he just locks up and does it. And you know, and that's why it's, I'm excited to be able to work with him. And speaking of, I mean, I know my son's in it, but yesterday Eric was a thug and John Pinkerton, who's the designer, he was he's our bad guy kicking open a door. You know, these are just
awesome,
like concept elements for the trailer. But that's what I love. Like, it's so funny because for years at Stonecap, like, we're always trying to get professional talent and have auditions and, you know, and but what I love is letting people play close to their personality. Not that Eric's a thug, but
I was just gonna say, oh, yeah. Geez, what would I be? The homeless guy probably coming out of a dumpster. So,
well, in this world, they're all homeless.
Oh, okay. So, I'd fit right in then.
It's just, but it's fun. I don't know. I would rather work with somebody that's just excited and having fun.
Yeah.
Than to go hire the most professional actor. And, you know, I want people to enjoy this. Like, it's really, you know, the next iteration of this new media development is just, why can't we all just, you know, go have fun, do mm-hmm. something creative and collaborate.
Right.
I mean, that's a, you know, Eric was excited to be a part of this
because
we got to go out, we get to go out and have fun together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I get to fly helicopters. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Right. Okay. So what are some of the biggest hurdles you're running into trying to do this kind
the
of
vision
series. The vision,
explaining the vision to people, to, like, again, I guess because I've been thinking about it for 2 years and mm-hmm. it's just been rolling around in my head and I've been obsessing about it, but explaining what the vision of this is, like, how it's so important to listen to the audience, it's so important to listen to what they want. And because what they don't have the capability of doing is making the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can buy a camera or whatever, but imagine if you have great ideas, but you have no picture taking ability or no, you don't know how to work with actors or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but you can contribute ideas to someone that's willing to take those ideas and flesh them out. And what we've noticed is, especially when you start with a seed crowd, people aren't that different. Like, I it's so funny because I've had some ideas
mm-hmm.
and I throw it out there and I'm surprised at how many people have the same idea.
Oh, okay.
Like, which at first you're kind of like, oh, I thought I had an original idea.
Yeah.
But then if you get past that, you're like, that's really great that there's a bunch of us that think
mm-hmm.
alike.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take all those, you know, think alike people and let's make something.
Right.
So I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. You know, I was just curious.
Oh, the biggest hurdle.
Yeah. I mean,
about you, Eric?
I would say for me so far, like, I haven't had a whole lot of hurdles necessarily. The biggest thing that I've ran up against is just how I can take the artistic, you know, design that John puts down and, you know, it's going through my head literally every day. How can I take that and make that applicable? Because I'm a perfectionist, right. If you guys don't know that yet.
Like, yeah.
If my copter's off balance, like, 1 gram aft or forward, like, it's got to be perfect.
Right.
And so, like, I'm trying to look at what he's doing artistically and see how I can accommodate that into practicality as far as making that thing just fly with precision.
Right. And that makes sense because you're, you know, like you said, generally, you know, you're filming and everything's got to be precise and slow. And now you're trying to make this thing actually be alive or think,
have a look,
yeah,
and have a feel, and yet still be within the realms
right.
of flying and so on. So yeah, that's something that I don't know if it's really even been a hurdle yet because we haven't done anything but prototype.
Well, the first time you flew, it was a hurdle.
It was a hurdle.
Yeah,
that's true.
That thing was so heavy.
It was heavy, and
he's like, Chad, I'm hovering at 75% throttle.
Wow.
So yeah, that was that. But I mean, we got through that. I mean, we mm-hmm. we made it fly we only needed it for like 10 minutes that night. So we got through the scene and then changed props and changed batteries and so on and so forth and balanced things a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny, Eric measures in, like, you know, tenths of a millimeter. I measure in centimeters.
Hey, right, exactly.
I took that one home and I measured the booms like between the motor shafts and they were like
it's all crooked.
An inch off crooked.
Oh,
I'm like,
man.
Going, oh no.
Yeah, right.
But that's the flight test way.
Yeah, sure.
Yep. Wow. Let's see. I had another question. I should write this. Why this notebook's here? I know a lot of times I think on a regular movie, though, like, they may shoot the middle part first, and then they may shoot the ending first, and then they may come. But this is completely different. You're really kind of going down step by step.
Yeah, we definitely can't shoot the ending.
Right.
And certain things we're going to be really creative in the process, like, for instance, that horizon shot.
Mm-hmm.
It was a horizon where you see Christian walking. We shot it with Christian with Christian and the drone, with Christian and the girl. So we shot options. Mm-hmm. So now if we, now imagine you can lay voice over that and you can say, you know, well, when we were going back to the boneyard, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can show this, or when I was going back to the boneyard, you know, so now you have options with cinematography.
I gotcha.
So what we're going to do is when we shoot things, we're going to always shoot options. Mm-hmm. And because of the structure and the design of how this will be cut together, hopefully we'll be able to get about 50% of all of our footage in the can before the first episode is done.
Oh, okay.
Then all you need are specific elements, mm-hmm. you know, specific scenes. And, you know, and as we go, we'll shoot with options. You know, mm-hmm. we'll have a scene end this way or have a scene end that way. And I'm not saying this is going to be easy by any mm-hmm. stretch of the imagination.
Right.
I know it's going to be hard, but it's... that's the challenge I want.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I was kind of relaying to you earlier is where, you know, I know you have a vision and everything, but now you have all these ideas coming through where you might have had this vision of one thing, and now with all these ideas coming in.
Oh, it's already changed.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's got to be tough.
But I got to tell you, to me, it's so empowering and so exciting. If I got 5-10 people that are in unison and they're mm-hmm. like, yeah, we like this. I'm all about it. Let's do that. That's what Flight Test was.
Mm-hmm.
It was listening to the community.
Right.
It was our designs come from their input.
Yeah.
That's so much more fulfilling than any idea I could come up with.
Right. Now, have you ever had a time where, okay, you're all set up, you got the idea and everything's done, and maybe the last, I don't know, hour or even day or whatever, you guys find another idea that came in that was so much better and over the top, and now you go, wait a minute,
that would be if we were determining what's better, what's more creative. What mm-hmm. we're doing is we're just looking for consistency
mm-hmm.
and unification. Like, it's because, yeah, there have been many times already where somebody just off on a tangent has what I think is an awesome idea.
Right.
We still have to forego that if it's just one out there, or if we can incorporate it where it doesn't derail anything else, then we'll do it.
Right.
But yeah, this is not a linear process.
Okay.
It's not just whoever spouts off anything and
yeah.
we'd be second guessing ourselves to
right.
the end of time.
Right.
This is really more about looking for consistency. Like when we put the logo up,
uh-huh.
okay, I don't know how many comments there were, 100
right.
comments.
Yep.
Half of them were for selection, I think, number 3.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then like 30-35% were for the next one, and then the last 20-15% were for the third option. So that's what most things are like. There's
uh-huh.
going to be a majority.
Okay.
I don't think there's been really a time yet that there's been a 50-50.
Okay.
And if there is, I'll just make a judgment call.
Uh-huh.
Because at 50-50,
right. Yeah.
There's no real wrong,
yeah.
you know, choice.
Yeah.
So
now have you found that most of the things that whether they went 80-20 or whatever falls with the favor of what maybe you have decided
yeah,
in the back
I think,
of your head?
I think I am my audience,
yeah.
which is a big plus. And that was one of the struggles with Ryan and Michael, even though they're just ridiculously talented.
Mm-hmm.
They don't fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not specifically the audience. I get my peeps. Like I understand,
right.
you know,
right.
and I would say 70% of the time I'm pretty much in line with what people
right.
want.
Right. And we would probably all agree on that for, you know, our background and everything. Now,
yeah.
for people outside of this hobby or don't know anything about it, do you think they're going to maybe are they going to grasp a hold of it? Who
no.
cares? I'll take that.
You know what? Because they won't even hear this podcast.
That's true. You're probably right. But I mean, say this thing does blow up though, or something, and it goes to the, you know, the feature film. Is this going to be just kind of like I don't want to say geeks, but I mean, is this something that's going to elaborate to a broader audience? Do you think?
Our hope is that there's a broader audience, and we do want to appeal to a broader audience. But if we don't, I'm not going to compromise our core audience.
Okay.
So it will only appeal to a broader audience if our core desires,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
appeal to a broader
right.
audience. So
right.
I know that sounds, maybe it's a little...
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I
really believe in it because that's what Flight Test was.
Uh-huh.
It was just stick to what our mission is. And our mission that... Oh, hold on. I got a cramp. We had a long day yesterday. It was like 90 degrees.
Well, I think one of the things that maybe the comment to that is that we're trying to spread as, you know, RC pilots and hobbyists. Mm-hmm. We're trying to spread our hobby constantly.
Exactly.
I mean, how long have you been flying that you're not trying to spread this hobby to every person you know? Oh, you got to get into flying, or you got to try this, or you got to try that. So hopefully the core group of RC enthusiasts will, you know, will spread this to their friends that, you know, like I have a ton of friends on Facebook from all the years I've done all these different things.
Right.
And so like I used to coach gymnastics years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so like a lot of the people who I used to coach, I'm still friends with on Facebook, and I'm like, check out this Rotor DR1 movie. Like I'm sitting there eating my scrambled eggs and drinking coffee in the morning and just clicking clicking invite, you know, all these people that, so like I'm getting people that don't have any interest in radio control at all to kind of try to see. So if everybody in the core group does that, mm-hmm. I mean, that could spread like wildfire. Right. So hopefully.
And you know what? Yeah, it's probably there is a little, we can tell already there's a lot of like female people coming into the webpage, mm-hmm. or the Facebook page, uh-huh. and that have opinions. And it's funny because flight tests was like zero. So I think we're already broadening the appeal, and I'm just basing it on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'll also appeal to a sci-fi crowd, mm-hmm. which may or may not be interested in RC flight at all, because it has those elements as well. But there's a good chance, like I like sci-fi, I love great sci-fi. So there's a good chance that our crowd also crosses over to the sci-fi crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the intent is that, you know, that it's a successful and popular program, but I would much rather have moderately successful program than a ridiculously successful that really discounted our audience or our people.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, not change the subject or anything, but I just wanted to mention, like you were talking about, broaden out the spectrum in the RC community. Lately, I don't know where this is stemming from or whatever, but probably the last 2 months, I have done a ton of teaching. I got a hold of the flight test, the Hobby Zone Delta Ray, and I carry that thing with me just about everywhere.
Nice.
And I've done, no matter where we're at or where we're flying, I usually have two or three people come up to me rather intrigued or maybe thought it was interesting or whatever. And I'd say almost 99% of the times now that we go out fly, somebody walks away that's got a couple flights with that Delta Ray, mm-hmm. and is blown away. And I've probably sold 10, 15 of them by now. But it's so fun to be able to just walk out, and they come up and they're so intrigued, and you hand them the transmitter and they're freak. No, I don't. And I said, no, you can fly this.
Yes.
You know, and within 10 minutes, they're off on their own. I'm standing off behind them, not even talking to them, and they're just flying around with this huge smile on their face. And to me, lately, that's all I've been doing.
I think the quality of the products that are out there now.
Yeah,
that,
and the prices.
Know, sure, have came down to where it's realistic for people.
Yeah.
You know, back in the old days,
we've
been talking about this at Flight Fest. We talked a ton about this with various people. You know, in the old days, like the kits we would buy came as a box of lumber.
Yes.
You know, and that's a 3-month build if you're really a perfectionist, and you're sanding and puttying and monocoating. And so then, you know, you've spent 3 months of your life going out there to build this thing, and you get into the field. You know, the utmost of care and exercise is, you know, to keep that plane in one piece, where now, and plus, you know, just the money that it cost to build back then compared to now.
Right.
So I think, you know, being able to get a hold of something that naturally flies a little bit better, you know, our technology is better. People are figuring out how to really dial these planes in and do it at a budget.
Right.
It's just made it available to so many people.
Yeah. And I don't think that they actually realize it, because after their first flight with the Delta Ray and they bring it in, they're asking questions like, okay, so what's it cost? $300, $400, $500 for this?
Sure.
I'm like, no, you can go down to Aerotech for $150.
Yeah.
You know, well, and they're like, what?
There's the stigma too that RC flying is impossible.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone thinks that it's like grabbing a hold of a helicopter where you're going to lift off and in under 30 seconds, it's going to be a pile of rubble and cost $500.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. It's just being able to, you know, get people to understand that it's not as hard as it used to be, and that, you know, it can be done on.
Right. And I'll just tell a real quick story, because it's one of my favorites. We were flying out at Jackson, which is our normal area.
Right.
And I was actually teaching a guy. guy on the Delta Ray, and the high school greenskeeper or whatever come running out there on his little golf cart, and he's like, hey, that's not gas. I don't want no gas. You know, he's worried about us burning the grass with the gas on the, you know. And I go, right. No. I said, it's just foam. It's got a little electric motor. So I was showing him and everything, and he was kind of a little intrigued about it. And I said, you want to fly? He's like, oh, no. I said, no. Come on. Well, I'll take you for a flight. No. So I put it in the air, and I was showing him everything, you know, 10 degrees of bank. And well, first of all, you know, with the Delta Ray, you hit the panic button, full throttle, and you just throw it. I mean, this thing could be upside down. You throw it, and the thing takes off. And he said, oh, wow, that's really awesome. So I was, you know, banking around a little bit. And I said, you know, here's the cool part. I said, we'll go ahead and land. I hold the button down, kill the throttle, and I kind of just set the radio down on the ground while I was holding the button. That thing just comes in and plops down at my feet. He was just like, you've got to be kidding me. So, you know, again, I put a new battery in, and he was flying all by himself. I wasn't, you know, and he says, you know what, tomorrow I'm going down to Aerotech. I'm buying one for me and my grandson. And
that's,
you know,
funny.
So I just love stories like that, to where 2-3 years ago that was impossible.
Sure,
you know,
you weren't.
Oh, is that my phone?
Somebody's phone.
Hold on. Sorry, Siri. That was weird.
I can hear it, and I'm looking
Siri
around.
Siri has interrupted our podcast.
Yeah. On my iPhone, it was in my pocket, and it kept maybe pressing the button.
Against the chair, probably.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right. No big deal. So
now we have to re-record the whole podcast.
No, I don't think so. We'll just leave Siri in. But
This is a lot of fun talking about it, because we've been so, I don't know, entrenched in it,
uh-huh,
and haven't really had a chance to talk to people about it.
Right. That's, you know, that's why I wanted to get you guys in here, because I was intrigued by it. And I obviously I knew a little bit about it, and I've heard you talk about it, and I've seen the set in your basement for how long now. But to actually sit down and get the inner workings of it and learn about it and see where you're going and everything, I was fascinated by it. You know,
I just thought of something.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, there's two things. One, the community, how some other ideas of what we want to do to get the community involved,
mm-hmm,
and also David. I've been talking to David about this.
Oh, okay.
And he's participated on the forum thread.
Right.
And we're trying to figure out if there's a way that he can even come over for a short stint so he can have some cameo appearances.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And then the community, and maybe David could participate the same way, but what we see is, like, in the future, since there's no internet, people are using ham radio equipment, maybe like slow scan TV or something like that, and
uh-huh,
what they're doing is sending, you know, transmissions, maybe video transmissions through ham radio equipment. Well, what that'll allow us to do is, I haven't even talked to Paul about this. I said, hey, I want to talk to you. And then I haven't even talked to him yet. So mm-hmm, he's probably going to hear it on this podcast. Paul Bitmata.
Okay.
And his son, Thomas.
Yep.
I would love for them to shoot like a video message, like it's right when that cataclysmic event is happening.
Oh, yeah.
And then our character comes across this video.
Oh, wow.
And I think that would be a really great way to start incorporating real community members,
mm-hmm,
you know, where they're always, you know, transmitting and receiving these different videos. So I don't know if anyone listening likes that idea. Let's hear.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one thing, you know, kind of wrapping this up a little bit, but obviously this probably won't go out for a couple weeks. So mm-hmm, keep that in mind.
Yeah.
But what I'd say 2 weeks down the road, is there any information, you know, you want to put out there for anybody that's listening, what's coming up here in the next couple weeks?
If it's 2 weeks from now,
yep,
you better log on quickly if you want to be a part of it.
Okay.
Because right now we're going to be in the heart of the early development. So the first episode is scheduled for like the first week in October.
Okay.
So we're going to continue all the way through. We're going to be receiving input and feedback, but mm-hmm, we want to hear from as many people as possible.
Okay.
So the website is rotordr1.com.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening to this at any point, and even if you come in, you know, months after, we're creating a great webisode series that you can watch.
Mm-hmm. That's fun. Oh, I don't know. I know we were kind of talking about, I think before the podcast, and I didn't realize this, the actual name. So it was DR, the number one, but if you spell out
the number one,
it's drone.
Yeah.
That to me, blew my mind. I didn't even think about that. That was pretty cool. Was that your idea?
Yeah, it was just, actually, it was still an accident because I'm trying to remember how I don't even remember how I came about. I think it was accidental.
Uh-huh.
Like I wanted, because rotor is what I wanted to call it. It was just rotor.
Uh-huh.
But it's too common. You mm-hmm. can't get that domain. Mm-hmm. You know, so I figured if I had some kind of nomenclature after it, you know, so I'm thinking, and I really don't remember how I came up with it, but it was some kind of accident. And then after thought about it, I thought that's great, you know, and
yeah.
and people do the same thing you did earlier. I'm like, spell out the number one.
Yeah.
D-R.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh,
that's just like,
it's
yeah.
so funny. Cause I was already part of the project and Dan, from the forums, Crafty Dan was the one who told me.
Oh, really?
I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And like, I'm part of it and didn't
right,
even
didn't
know
it.
So yeah,
that was pretty cool.
You know, also I want to give some shout
Absolutely.
Outs to people on the forum, because we mentioned Bank and Yank, David, you know, RC Explorer,
right?
Hairbegone. It's
Hairbegone.
Yeah, it's H-E-R-R.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, Hairbegone and Bank and Yank have been, oh my gosh, they've contributed so much. Yeah, and they are somewhat active on Facebook, which Facebook, the platform is a little better for this, because what happens is when people, it keeps the comments shorter,
mm-hmm.
and then people like the comments. So it's like they're voting up
right.
the things they like. So
okay.
it's a lot easier to use that to aggregate information.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, we've just had so many wonderful people helping out, and Flying Monkey has been involved.
Yep.
I mean, it's been really great. And I know there's lots more people, but we're going to make sure people, you know, they can go to our Facebook page and see who contributed what. And,
yeah.
And then when we get our website going, we're going to have kind of a vote up down system with, you know, the forum or the input on our page.
Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it kind of got so overwhelming there for a while with ideas and everything. Now you kind of have a staff that's
I definitely want to, thanks. I want to call out to Megan and Steven. They are both at StoneCap and have been each day helping go through information. And then we have these brainstorm sessions and we discuss it, and they've been great. And even Tyler, who's shooting right now,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he's come up with some great ideas for the trailer. And we have Patrick, who is doing all the behind the scenes stuff. He is dedicated to behind the scenes. So he will host,
mm-hmm.
shoot, and edit
okay.
all the behind the scenes stuff. And he's doing a fantastic job.
Wow.
So lots of people involved. Also, I got to mention Tom Nicholson. He and I have worked together for quite some years. He was assistant director on the feature film I directed in 2009, and we did some corporate stuff together. And he lives in L.A., but I actually flew him in for this whole project. He's going to be here for like 8 weeks.
Wow!
And I brought him on as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
One of my industry trusted
yeah.
people. He's worked on like 45 feature films.
Wow!
I mean, the guy is just phenomenal. So he's here now, actually staying at my house till we get him a place.
Oh my gosh.
So we really have a really great team.
Uh-huh.
Flight Test is helping with some of the builds. It's just everybody's really excited to be a part of it, and I'm humbled and happy to have them be a part of it.
Hey, real quick question made me think, you're bringing all these people in or whatever,
uh-huh.
and I would say probably 90% of them, besides like Eric and yourself,
mm-hmm.
don't know much about RC or the quads or try. Has anybody sparked some interest? Like, hey, you know what? That's pretty cool and interesting. Could I try it? Or
what do you mean?
Like of the crew.
Oh.
You know what I mean? You know, you got bringing all these different people in that really aren't RC related.
Definitely interest, but
uh-huh.
I think the shoot days are so focused and intense.
Sure.
Like,
right.
There's a lot of questions asked.
Okay.
But not a lot of people. The aircraft we have on set are all props and,
uh-huh.
and stuff like that. So there's really nothing like, here, try this out.
Yeah.
You know? But there's a lot of intrigue, definitely.
Yeah. Like when we're on set, I don't fly the copter even unless it has to be flown
right.
for
right.
us scenes.
Yeah.
Because, if I'm off playing around, oh, hey, watch what Rotor can do.
Yeah.
And I crash it into
yeah,
the wall.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense. But, I just wondered if some of these people that didn't have no interest in it before, like, you know what, man, that's pretty
well,
cool.
The people we've been around, remember the barber shop across the street from the one shooting location?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A couple guys came out and they're like, what are you doing? Oh, what is it? Rotor DR1? And he's like on his phone getting on the Facebook page.
Uh-huh. No kidding.
Like gave us a like right there.
No kidding.
Yeah. So they're definitely intriguing and bringing interest. And as we go, I'm sure it'll be a lot more.
Sure.
But as far as on set, it's so, I mean, we're moving 110%.
Uh-huh.
And, you know,
yeah.
It's not a lot of time to, like, sit and I guess
even come up with the idea of learning to fly at that point. It's we're go
right,
go go
right,
you know.
Yeah. Right. One thing too, real quick, I wanted you to throw out there for the people that haven't, you know, or just maybe listening to this and finding this out. You know, what's the YouTube channel and the Facebook and the webpage and all that?
Well, it's
where can people find this stuff?
Yeah, Rotor DR1
okay.
with the number one.
Mm-hmm.
So if you search that on Facebook or YouTube, and
okay.
It's all out there. The website is not up yet, but by the time this is out, it will be. But yeah, you can just search it and find it. It's so funny. We have subscribers on YouTube without any videos. But the behind the scenes and the trailer will go out soon. And I didn't explain that concept. We're building a trailer. It's called a concept trailer.
Okay.
And then that's going to be the piece that people look at and say, well, change this or do that.
Oh,
so the concept trailer is... It's a work in progress. It's mm-hmm. not actual scenes from the series.
Okay.
We're just shooting conceptual scenes so people can look at it and say, oh, I like this. I don't like that.
Oh, and then so after they initially see it or hey, we like this one or whatever, but they won't really actually know which scene you're going to put in though, will they?
No. No,
so that'll be kind of interesting because you're like, well, I picked this one, but you won't actually know till
exactly.
That's kind of fascinating. So
it's kind of like unwrapping a present.
Yeah. Like, is it going to be the one I picked?
Or, right. Yeah. Exactly.
That's cool. I like that idea.
I mean, I'm excited. I wish I was part of the community almost as much as doing it.
Yeah. Wow. That's.
I mean,
awesome.
I am, but I have more knowledge of the inner workings.
Right. Right. Anything else to add, Eric? Is there anything else you wanted to?
No, I'm just excited about flying helicopters. Like I'm the one cool thing, we got to do a scene with the little race quads. Like that's kind of a new up and coming part of the hobby.
Yeah.
And I am like such a snob about my copter's gotta weigh 18 pounds and be 5 foot in diameter and huge. And
yeah.
So I got a hold of Alex's little blackout race quad and oh my goodness, I actually have Kurt Barrett, he lives not far from here and he's on the forums quite a bit. I forget his name on the forums. Do you remember?
No, off the top of my head.
I don't remember. It's hard to keep everybody's
with a
real
T.
name.
Uh-huh. I can't remember. Anyway, so he cut me out on his CNC router a race frame.
Oh, no kidding.
And Alex had said that was the most, you know, most fun one he had flown out of all of the ones he had flown up to that point.
Uh-huh.
So Kurt cut me one out and I got all my motors. Actually, I'm going to go home and my motors are supposed to be there.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool because it's broadening my horizons. I'm getting to fly like little stuff and big stuff and different, you know, I'm getting to kind of get back into creative mode. Like I've been designing frames for 3 years, but it's mostly been around doing aerial
for your work.
AP work.
Right.
And so, you know, getting to design something that doesn't have to carry a camera is, is kind of fun.
Or a tiny camera.
Yeah, it's just fun. So
right.
I'm excited about the fact that, you know, like the only thing I have to put on there is an FPV system. I don't have to carry a gimbal and, you know.
Right.
So that's what's exciting to me is just getting to pour some creativity into some designs that'll be specific to the movie. And
fun. Awesome. All right. Well, hey, if you guys don't mind, though, before we wrap this up a little bit, I know I wanted to talk just a little bit about the B-17 and the ride we did a couple weeks ago. Is that all right?
Yeah.
You guys don't mind? Because
sure.
I know, Eric, you were kind of there and everything. Well, since the episode's out and everything, and I'm always back and forth with Adam Drain and everything.
And Adam's participated in this as well.
Yeah, and you know, I've had Adam on the podcast, and you know, he sat down and I wanted him to explain about riding on it and everything, and he's truly right. Until you actually do it and you get on the airplane and you go for a ride, you can't physically. It's really hard to describe to somebody how it is and it's how amazing it is. I guess I should say. And I told him in the podcast that a couple years ago I had the opportunity to go for a ride, and I was on the fence of paying the $400. I was like, man, you know, $400, man, you know. And if I had to do it all over again, I would probably pay $1,000 to do it again. It was just, you know, that unbelievable to do that. And I just wanted to maybe talk a little bit about it and try to describe a little bit in detail, you know, what the ride was. But, you know, Eric, when we first got up there, And again, I've worked for an airline for years. My wife worked for airlines for the last, 15 years. And I've been on just about every kind of airplane you can imagine. I'm, from the, they used to call it the San Antonio sewer pipe, it was a little metro turboprop air, I've been on everything. So going into it, I knew it would be fun and exciting, but I didn't realize it was going to be that good. So, when we first get up there and you go and you walk around the airplane and you look at it, and I'm thinking we're going to see this beautiful piece of World War II machinery that's all pristine. And, but Eric, you can attest to this and talk a little bit about it. When you see this airplane, it literally looks like it just came back from a bomber mission. I mean, there is oil all over this thing, and it's dirty and it's grimy, and I don't want to say it looks like a piece of junk, but it looks like it's used.
It's raw and organic.
Yes.
It doesn't have a home, does it? Doesn't it just keep flying around?
Yeah, it does have a home. I don't know the specific location, but that plane is from Georgia.
Okay.
Or that's where the owners, where they keep it. But yeah, you're kind of right. It does kind of just travel around stop to stop.
Right.
They have a full-time mechanic that goes around with it. So, if it gets in somewhere for the 3 or 4 days it sits, they send in parts if they need to fix it. So, yeah. So it just keeps flying. I'm sure they probably have to clean it up, every now and then, but to just physically, and I remember Josh was kind of looking at it and he looked a little nervous. I don't know if you noticed it. He's like, wow, this thing's really kind of old. And well, yeah, it is old, but I think he was just a little bit nervous, getting in the thing. It was kind of funny to see the look on his face. So, you initially see it and look at it. You're like, I was kind of blown away, the looks of it and how old and everything it looked. And then when you get inside of it, you realize how small it really is, how they stuff 10 people inside that airplane and everything. So they go through a little pilot briefing and everything, and we get all set to go, and you go in and they got some makeshift seats in the back, to get everybody in. You buckle in, and the first thing, they fire up that first engine and it just roars and it rumbles, and the plane shakes, and it kind of fills up with smoke, and you could smell it, and it almost kind of brings you back to World War II and what those guys felt at the time, and what they were going through, and the thoughts in your head. Everything was running through my mind when them engines were just spooling up, and you're taxiing out and the thing's just rumbling and shaking, because it really is a tin can. There's no insulation in this thing. You can almost look through some of the rivets. They had the waste gunner doors were open. They had the hatch off the top, and it's very loud, and they offer you earplugs. But like I took Adam's advice and he says, here's earplugs. Go ahead, take them, wear them. But if you want the full effect, don't wear them.
Yeah.
So you barely hear yourself think and talk. It's so loud in there. And Adam was explaining to us, again, I've been on, I've probably got millions and millions of flights on airliners, and you're so used, you strap in, you get up, and you're at altitude, you take the seatbelt off. Adam literally said, as soon as the wheels leave the ground, we're up and we're walking around. And he wasn't joking. I mean, I didn't even feel the wheel. The takeoff was so smooth, for one, I couldn't believe it. And it just almost kind of feels like you're in slow motion. And literally, the wheels were an inch off the ground. He says, all right, let's get up and walk around. And I was sitting up in the radio room at the time when we took off, and right above us, they had the hatch. And it was completely open. I mean, it was almost kind of like a convertible. And Adam says, all right, Chris, get up, stand up. You want to look outside, and you're looking at the sky, sitting in the chair, and you're like, I don't know if I want to stick my head up outside of a moving airplane. You're really hesitant. And then
how fast is it going?
I think we were cruising at, like, I want to say 100. Well, you probably know better, Eric, because you were in the chase plane. 170 mile an hour, 60?
60 knots.
Oh, okay. So around 180 maybe.
Mile an hour.
Yeah. So we weren't going tremendously fast. I mean, and being in that big airplane,
but you're closer to 200 miles an hour than you're not.
Yeah, exactly. So at first you're really hesitant to stick your head outside, but there's Adam. He's just hanging out, looking around. It's like, come on, Chris, get up here, And that first vision, when I first kind of popped my head out, now it does have a little windscreen in the front, so the first couple feet, it kind of...
You expect your head to pop off?
Well, at first, yeah, at first, but it really doesn't. The air kind of comes up over your head a little bit.
Okay.
But that first vision, when you actually stick your head out there and you see the tail, and you're in a climb, so the tail's kind of aiming at the ground, and you're watching the airport just disappear, with the tail and everything's was kind of shaking and vibrating. It was a truly an experience, you know. And so I'm yelling at everybody else. I'm like, Alex, you got to get up here, Josh. You know, and it was really cool to see everybody's faces, you know, initially, like, you want me to stand up and put my head out? No. You know, everybody was very, very hesitant. But the second you do that and you get that 360 degree view, it was unbelievable.
Huh.
You know, it just...
I'm so jealous. I wasn't...
Yeah, I would suggest anybody, if you're on the fence, just even a little bit about paying the money to go for a ride, it is so well worth it. You know, look at...
How much is it?
It's around $400. And you get a 30-minute ride. Mm-hmm. And I asked them about it. I said, now, do they do basically everything, what we do? Said, absolutely. We open the waste gun doors, you know, they pop the hatch. So
didn't they open the bomb bays for you guys?
They did open the bomb bay doors.
Is not protocol, I
right,
understand.
Right, right. And I'll talk about that here in just a second. But the other thing that kind of amazed me, even in the back with the waste gunners, when they open those doors, you physically could just step out of the airplane, you know. And when I was telling people about it, and I took a couple videos and pictures of everything, they're like, well, how did they strap you in, or what were you hanging? I said, strapped in? We weren't strapped in. And a couple times physically, I probably shouldn't, but I grabbed a hold of the side and I hung right out the door and was snapping pictures and doing some video. You literally...
Snapping pictures?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just hung right
phone?
Out there. Yeah, with my phone.
Yeah, I see that.
Hoping I wasn't going to lose it.
Parachute on your iPhone.
Yeah.
I dropped my phone when I got here.
Well, and that's one thing Adam did say. He goes, do whatever you want, but we're not going to turn around and go back for your iPhone if you do lose it, you know, out the side
yeah,
or whatever.
Right.
But I was amazed at literally how, you know, with that whole airplane being up, you could just step right outside of it. You could look down at the tail wheel and just look through the tail wheel and see the ground. You know, it was amazing. And a couple of the other things here real quick, like when we went down into the nose for the bombardier, it literally is a tiny little, probably a 2x2 crawl space where you physically crawl underneath the pilots. You get down and you're on your hands and knees and you crawl through almost like a little corridor. And then boom, it's almost like this giant room opens up. You can get in there, physically stand up. They had the 250 millimeter waste guns on each side. And then behind it had like a full desk with a chair where you could sit down and you know, they would do their calculations for their bomb runs and everything. I was amazed at how big it was and how much room they had in that nose. But to physically sit in that bombardier seat at the very front of the airplane with all that plexiglass around you and see everything, you know, from the ground to the sky to left and right, the view that bombardier had and seeing what was coming and everything was just phenomenal.
Wow.
It was unbelievable.
Once we landed in Pittsburgh, I crawled up in there. And,
right.
Yeah, like you could turn around and see like all the hydraulic lines.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Where the rudder pedals were right there.
Right.
You turn around and like, so the person's feet are there.
It right.
Was, yeah.
And, you know, obviously they were joking, but one of the briefings was when we were in the plane, all the control cables run right overhead. They're all right there. So Adam was kind of joking around. He goes, no, don't reach up and grab this cable and pull down on it because we might make a right turn or something, you know, kind of joking around. Not that that would happen, but that's literally, you know, you can see everything moving in the airplane as you're flying along. Hmm. Now, we started to run into some pretty gnarly weather. The VFR was getting really low. Well, I would say, guessing we probably had around 2 to 3 miles viz coming into Pittsburgh, Eric.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
At one point, it got down to the point where it was probably less than that.
Yeah, right around the river down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have instrument equipment
right.
in what we were flying, so.
Yeah, you guys were fine.
We were okay.
But, you know, that plane literally has the World War II instrumentation in it. Now, the only thing that the pilot did have, he had a little GPS that was kind of Velcroed on the side there that he was looking for showed him where the airport was. But physically, we couldn't see, you know, Allegheny Airport for quite a while, and they were really looking out the window, and we were kind of dodging around the storms and
I noticed
everything.
That when my buddy Mike with the Cirrus was, like, really gracious to let me fly.
Yeah.
So I got to fly from the time we took off the whole way there.
Oh, wow.
So, like, to get to chase a B-17,
yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? That was the coolest thing ever.
Right.
So, but I noticed that, you know, one of the things – It admittedly was a little disappointing, but I get it. We were in really, you know, the visibility was really low. And we found out when we got there, you have to be what's called fast certified to get close to the airplane with another one. So because Mike doesn't have that rating and I certainly don't, we had to keep our distance away. But yeah, we got close to the airport and like they're weaving all these clouds. And at first I didn't know why they were doing that. So I'm trying to track with them and we're going through all these, you know, up and down, changing elevation.
Yeah,
but I found out afterwards when we landed, I talked to the pilot and he said it was just because you guys were VFR completely.
Yeah, exactly.
So he was trying to fly where he had visibility.
Yeah, and I, you know, like I said, I kept watching, you know, he'd look over at his little handheld, you know, the GPS and, you know, he could see his track and where the airport was, but we physically couldn't see it. And he was just kind of dodging around those rainstorms to try to get some viz on, you know, on that airport. So I was amazed. You know,
I was shocked at how fast that thing was.
Oh, really?
Like, you mentioned when you guys took off, it felt like it was slow motion.
Oh, yeah.
And like, we're, you know, a Cirrus is kind of a hot rod little plane, you know, for a four-seater. And like, it was everything we had to be able to keep to catch you guys.
No kidding.
You guys got out, obviously, and because of the turbulence, we had to
wait
turbulence. To take off.
Yep.
And so, you know, it was 2 or 3 minutes of a lead you guys had. Mm-hmm. And we were pushing 180-ish knots to try to catch you guys. And, like, we finally did.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I didn't think – I figured being as big as that airplane is, it would be sluggish and slow.
Oh,
and,
man.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and like I was saying, you know, when we first stuck the head out the window, we were in a pretty. Now we cruised over there at 2,500 feet the whole way, but that initial climb out of the airport, literally, when you first stuck your head out, you seen the tail was aimed at the ground, and we were climbing hard.
Yep.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Now you were talking about the Bombay doors. Mm-hmm. When we took off and got going there for a minute, we were intrigued. You know, hey, can we open? Ah, Adam says normally we don't do that with passengers. Well, I would say we were 3/4 of the way there, and I was really intrigued after a while. I was watching the pilots and what they were doing and everything, and up on the top panel there, I seen the Bombay switch, you know, and everything. He glanced back, and he looked, and everybody was kind of looking around everything, and he reached back, and he flipped that switch. Pretty soon, the Bombay doors opened, Chad. And this is hard to explain, but literally from the radio room up to the back of the pilots is where the Bombay door is. Now, have you ever been in a B-17?
On the ground.
On the ground. So you know there's that little aluminum track that's probably 6 inches wide.
It's like a catwalk across there.
Yeah, that goes from the radio room to the pilot deck there to walk across a Bombay. Now, I was behind the pilots with Brian at the cameraman, you know, at the time, and I was pointing. I'm like, Brian, turn around. It was on, when he opened them doors, literally Brian just turned around and had that camera hanging out the bomb. I mean, Brian literally could have, I could, not that I would ever, I literally could have just put my hand on Brian, he would have been out the Bombay door. It was amazing with those doors open. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But anyway, we did get into Pittsburgh and landed, and I just can't. It really is hard to describe the experience on something like that.
I'm so glad. Speaking of Brian, it's a little rabbit trail here, but I'm so glad he's having so much fun, because Brian was recommended to me from a friend of our, like a mutual friend.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, hey, this kid, he's really talented. He doesn't really have, you know, a lot of experience, but you know, he's really trustworthy. And we brought him down here, and he just jumped and fit right in. And, and since then, he's been, you know, Europe. He's been on
the B-17.
Plane.
I mean,
he's just, every time I see him, he's got a huge smile on his face.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it.
And it was great to watch Brian. I don't know how much experience he has or how many flights he's really been on. And somebody like that probably really didn't know what to expect. But after we took off and watched him with a camera, the guy did not stop smiling the entire time. I mean, I think he was really intrigued about that, you know, once we got on the ground.
That's the best thing, when you can see people working and their passions and their strengths and just really loving it.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing better.
So
Our ride, we flew home, obviously.
Oh, that's right.
And
thank goodness
drove.
You guys waited for that rainstorm, too.
Yeah, the rain came in after we landed, so we waited it out for, I don't know, we filed our IFR plan for, I think, 12:45 and had to wait till like 1:30.
Right.
And so by the time we took off, well, I don't know why they chose to route us away. I mean, they probably just, you know, we sent our IFR plan straight to Akron.
Yeah, direct, yeah.
And so they turned us right into it.
Oh.
And so, like, we were coming home. I mean, it was just like flying in a cotton ball
sure.
the whole time.
Yep.
You know, it was It was nuts.
In the soup.
You know, and I've been, you know, I fly with Mike all the time, and he's an extremely competent pilot, and it, you know, just, but the weather was, it was yep. insane. Like, we had to actually, at one point, we requested different altitude because we were getting slammed around so hard. Yep. Dave Knopf is in the back seat sleeping.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I couldn't believe it. We hit, at one point, our vertical speed indicator, like, our plane was level, so it didn't actually pitch us nose up or nose down.
Right.
But our vertical speed indicator, like, literally out of nowhere, went to 1,000-foot descent per minute and just dropped us like 200 feet just almost instantly.
Yep.
And then turned around and was at 1,000 feet per minute climb rate. So like, we have a 2,000 foot per minute, you know, variation and what's going on with the plane, but it's not pitching.
Yep.
He's got autopilot on the Cirrus, which, you know, at certain points we would utilize it for you know, just holding level.
Sure.
And oh my goodness, it was insane. And Dave's just sleeping through it back
there. No big deal.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I think he woke up at one point when we dropped real hard. And,
yeah. You
know, I think his head hit the ceiling. But yeah, so that was an interesting ride home. And when we came in at Akron Canton, you know, we're on the localizer coming in.
Yeah.
And I mean, we couldn't see the runway till we were 800 feet from it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the cloud ceiling was super low.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it was that was a great day though.
It was.
So anyway, I just wanted to give a shout out to Adam Drain again. You know, without him, that wouldn't even have been possible. And the whole crew, the pilots were awesome. Oh, one thing real quick, one that I thought was fascinating. When we did get on the ground, we were talking to pilots and everything. And I asked the captain, I said, why did we really only, you know, I thought for sure when we took off and got going, we were going to be over there, you know, like 5,000 feet or whatever, you know, get 4,500 because we were flying VFR and we flew at 2,500 feet. And I said, why did we fly so low? You know, and he goes, why wouldn't we? He goes, we like to look around. And plus, and he says, we like to let people know we're coming, you know. And I was like, that's a perfect answer.
That's awesome.
You know, them guys were just phenomenal. So, but again, great shout out to Adam Drain. We really appreciate it. And the whole crew and everything, they were phenomenal. And if you get a chance, get on the website, libertyfoundation.org. Go check them out and, you know, help them guys out. Everything they do is off of donations. So if you guys help them out and keep this thing going, it would be awesome. So other than that, do you guys have anything else you wanted to add or... I think we covered a lot.
I think I talked a lot. Yeah. I'll shut up now.
No, that was fantastic. I really appreciate you guys coming in.
Anytime.
Yeah, anytime too, Chad. You got anything you want to come on or talk about? Or, you know, maybe after the series gets going or whatever, if you want, we're more than welcome to come back.
Well, I'm sure we'll need you on set at some point.
I can be there to be the homeless guy coming out of the dumpster, sure. Yep. So, other than that, I think we're going to get out of here. Hey, guys, real quick too, we got the FT After Hours Instagram page is up. 99% of everything on there is done by Wayne Griffith, and his photos are phenomenal.
Nice.
He makes me look really good flying. I don't know how he does it, so check that out.
His photos are some of the best.
Yeah, he's really good. And I mean, the guy carries his camera. I don't care if we're going to go out and fly for 5 minutes. He brings his camera and he'll shoot 30, 40 pictures.
Yeah.
You know, and then he'll go, hey, check this one out. I'm like, how did you do that? You know, I don't even remember that, you know, and he's really good. And we're picking up a lot of followers pretty quick. So
nice.
they must be enjoying them. Well, so check that out. FT After Hours on Instagram. Hit me up on Twitter. Or if you have any questions or whatever, shoot me an email, chris@flighttest.com. I love the crash stories. I'm compiling another big list of them. So next time we get back in here, we'll talk about them and get them out there. And real quick, if you guys like, just a quick thought, we're thinking about, like, maybe if we get a really good crash story or something kind of bizarre, we're even thinking about getting a hold of you and maybe doing a little phone interview with you, and you can talk about your crash on the air and you know, something like that. So, all right, other than that, we're going to get out of here, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. All right,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, see you guys.